Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We're chatting with Eric Wetterling, founder and editor of The Hedgeless Horseman. Now, Eric, we've been chatting a fair bit off mic, talking about, again, just how much the underlying precious metal stocks are continuing to drift lower as we've actually gotten a little bounce in some of the precious metals, especially gold. Gold seems to be holding up pretty well in this general bear market and general fear that most traders seem to have on their mind, simply because it seems like interest rates are going up and there is less liquidity in the market. I think this is really proving to everybody that stocks are stocks, whether they're gold stocks, silver stocks, or tech stocks. They can all move down together when capital is a bit more constrained. One thing you were telling us off mic is that you're really focusing on diversification. Now, you can really get diversified in precious metal stocks because, quite frankly, there are a lot of them. There are not a ton high-quality miners and major miners. We've actually seen more combinations of these recently. But when you drive down into the juniors, boy, oh boy, there are a bunch of them. And there are a bunch new juniors that came into the market two to three years ago. Everything really seems to be underwater. Now, not every junior is underwater, but a lot are, and a lot are continuing to show weakness. So why now, Eric, do you think diversification is critical when, in all fairness, there is a bit of a dichotomy here between some of the, I guess, more high-quality juniors that are holding up while a lot of the others continue to drift?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it comes down to risk-reward based on where we are at in the, let's say, sentiment cycle. I mean, first of all, why is diversification pretty good when everyone is fearful? I mean, to me, it's pretty obvious the fact that you'll typically be a bit more rational than when you have a very concentrated portfolio. I mean, even in a hot market, if you're heavily concentrated, which I have been, you know, in previous years, you get quite emotional, let's say, and you watch every tick and all of that, and you start to get paranoid if it goes down, you start to get greedy as soon as it goes up, etc. So I mean, just from that perspective, I mean, it's a lot easier to feel like, hey, if you have, let's say, 30, 40 juniors right now in different jurisdictions, even different metals, etc., I mean, what would need to happen for all of them to go down, especially when the, you know, future expected returns are so high? I mean, I expect that, I don't know, one third of my juniors, if they, you know, become successes, let's say, I think that would be enough pretty much. And of course, I mean, if we're at a sentiment low, which we are definitely right now, and like two last days, we've seen gold and silver higher, juniors following the broader markets down. So the price to value gap is just increasing. Okay, I mean, if you're at an ebb, how do you make sure you are along with for the tide? That's diversification in my book. And the same applies on the opposite side. If you're very diversified when a sector is hot, for example, a market is hot, you'll be sure that you'll be along for the ride down. So I typically, right now, because I don't want to be, let's say, too greedy, because anything can happen. I mean, it's a chaotic world. So I want to be, I don't know what's going to happen with any particular jurisdiction, any particular project, whatever. The only thing I know is that prices are extremely low. We're at the sentiment low. And one day, unless station ends, we're going to have an upturn and the next sentiment high. So how do I make sure that I get a piece of that? That's via diversification. Again, the opposite of if you're very diversified at the top, you'll make sure that you catch the full brunt of the overall market decline, for example. And then, I mean, in my perspective, if we're at near record low valuations for juniors, even though everything can get cheaper, that's not what I'm saying. But if we're anywhere near record low valuations and you can diversify into placements with warrants, etc., I mean, the risk reward gets so incredibly skewed that, yeah, basically that's my strategy. I'm trying to participate in as many private placements as I can. And some juniors, their warrant strike in the current private placements is like 50% lower than the stocks traded at the last 52-week high or two-year high.
Well, Eric, on the topic of trying to diversify one's portfolio, there are some people that would say you don't want to diversify, you know, the old statement, you know, diversification is diversification. It's interesting, though, a few of the people that have made those comments actually have pretty diversified portfolios. And when you look at something like an ETF, whether it's GDXJ for the gold stocks or SILJ for the silver stocks, those ETFs have 40, 50, 60 different positions in them, and they are diversified. And so people will say, well, why don't you just buy the ETF then? But a lot of those ETFs don't hold 80 to 90% of the stocks that we all trade because they're only into the bigger, larger cap names, some of the royalty names. So let's dive into the topic of how do you diversify? Are you diversified across different stages of miners, like producers versus developers versus explorers? If you're looking at explorers, are you diversified into pre-discovery stories, stories where they've made an initial discovery, but you know it's still an unknown, or ones that have ounces in the ground? Is it jurisdiction? Walk us through how you look at diversification in your portfolio specifically.
Yeah, I mean, it all boils down to me trying to get the absolute best risk reward, because we can't know what the future holds. All we can try to guesstimate basically, okay, how much do I make if things go well? How much do I lose if things go poorly, let's say? I mean, right now we have very high inflation across the board in the miners. We've seen developers having problems. We see cost creeps in the producers. And I mean, what's the upside to them? Many of these mature mining companies, they would actually need a much higher gold price to actually on paper become, let's say, cheap. And they don't have that speculative premium mania or whatever. It's not like people who get into Barrick and like, yeah, this is going to go up, could go up five times or whatever. And right now it's the blue sky and potential that's way cheaper than the other ones. Because if you look at Newmont, I mean, that recently closed at an all-time high. I guess Franco-Nevada also is around an all-time high. The gap between the junior sector, the real juniors and the micro cappers, et cetera, versus gold and the majors is the largest I've ever seen. So to me, there's a lot more upside in the junior sector. Yes, they come with more risk, but at some point in time, it's like, what is risk? I mean, valuation risk is risk in my book, something that should go down and stay down. I don't know many juniors right now that should go down and stay down, but that doesn't mean they won't go down, at least for a while. So I'm trying to simply pick, I would say, the best risk reward in the best risk reward, because to me, gold is probably the best risk reward right now. And within that, I think juniors provide a lot better risk reward than the other ones. And if you follow that even further, it's like, yes, you can buy GDXJ or whatever, but you're not going to get any warrants on those companies. And they can't have that, let's say, asymmetrical upside versus downside, because every stock can go down 100%. Not Barrick can typically go up 500%. Juniors can. If you're diversified in the cheapest asset class, and you buy warrants, and you diversify away the, mathematical diversification, so you try to spread out the company risk. It's like, if this market turns, and not if, when this market turns, and I don't know if that could be today, tomorrow, 6 months from now, a year from now, 2 years from now, whatever. I just know that when it turns from these kind of levels, that's going to be a really big rise. And if you have warrants, et cetera, that's just going to supercharge that upside, obviously. And furthermore, you actually give cash to the companies, et cetera. So it's like, and if, let's say you have some good advanced explorers, whatever, that's typically where I focus. Because again, one thing I wouldn't want to happen is that, and that also goes to too heavy concentrated portfolio right now. I wouldn't want to end up in a full-blown gold silver bull with no gold or silver. So I typically don't prefer pre-discovery plays. I don't prefer mature plays. I want the ones who can actually, even with dilution and, you know, kind of bad capital markets, could at least add some value. Because if the upturn comes in a year, if they created 30% more value or 20% more value, that's at least 20 to 30% more stuff, if you can call it that, that I will get beta from. So even though it's not the most optimal scenario that they only add 20-30% because the dilution keeps down, because in reality they add 50% more ounces or 60 or whatever, that's still something that's not priced in typically today, when ounces in the ground or whatever is valued very low. But that's going to supercharge the future returns. And then you, in some way, get paid to wait. But you can't, of course, know what actual company is going to create exactly that much. So even if you have three stocks you super duper like, stuff happens. things can go wrong, etc. So I prefer to make sure, I guess what I'm saying, I'm trying to make sure that I will catch the next flow. And I try to position myself that when that flow comes, I will make the absolutely most amount of money I possibly can. And to me, that right now is basically getting in as many private placements as I can. Because when that happens, I think it's going to be a biblical experience like I had when we had the Q1 rally of 2016. I didn't even have warrants back then.
So, Eric, I do actually agree with the aspect of building up warrant positions right now, because we are seeing some very good teams almost be forced to issue warrants. I do have a bit of an issue, though, with going into a wide range of explorers, because even saying that they add 30%, say, onto their resource, ounces in the ground aren't getting valued very much. You need to balance out how much they are spending and what that environment is to raise that money again. Because if they need to raise that money where they added that 30% in resources, but they're adding warrants and they're raising at a lower price, was it really worth it to add those 30% value right now in what unfortunately continues to be a down market for explorers? You're also going to get a pushback saying, why not be into the cashed up producers, the companies that typically do bounce back first, and in all fairness, have been doing better. People that have been in producers, the biggest producers, they've lost far less money than the juniors. I realize you want that torque to the upside, but doesn't there come a point where you need to take a more defensive stance for your portfolio rather than continuing to get into what broadly is the riskiest area for precious metal stocks, being the explorers that simply burn through cash?
I guess my approach is a lot different than most people. I mean, this is my fourth heavy correction, and you probably wouldn't have that kind of corrections if you were in Barrick, etc. So it's like, to me, I try to think from, you know, let's say mathematical risk reward perspective. So this makes total sense to me. But to your point, yes, you would hope. I mean, I try to get into, I mean, there are some companies that recently raised money or are raising money, whatever. So the enterprise value of some, especially micro cappers, I mean, that's not a lot. Even if they do something, I mean, right now they're even undervalued based on typically what they have. So, I mean, if they hit something, I mean, maybe a drill hit or a few holes is actually worth, you know, 150% of their current enterprise value or market cap or whatever. So I don't think it's hard to create value now if you just have a few million dollars and let's say you have something to go by, meaning that they're at least have one discovery hole or probably a discovery hole. So it's like the value creation portion, I don't think that's a problem at all, because the values right now are so low that it's going to be hard for the, let's say, the better and more de-risked explorers to actually not create value if they just cashed up. A few more hits might add, especially at a gold price like this, might add, who knows, 50 million in market cap, and they have like 50 million in value and have 30 million in market cap. So I think we get blinded by the current valuations out there, and we think that, okay, that means that the value some of these companies do, they, since they don't get paid for it, that means they didn't add value. But that's, of course, not true. It's just that Mr. Market is not pricing in that value. So to increase the value right now is probably the easiest in history if you're cashed up, because there's so little value priced in. So that, I don't think that's even going to be a big issue. But of course, from a case-to-case basis, some will miss, some will hit. I mean, I know some juniors that might, you know, add 300% in implied value in the next year or so. I mean, you don't need many of those to happen. I mean, if you need one in four to do that, and then you add on the actual revaluation from the sentiment swing, I mean, to me, mathematically, it makes total sense, but not a lot of people, I think, are comfortable having the kind of swings I have, because I take typically full brunt of every downtrend, because I'm, you know, in from the very top tick to the very bottom tick. But I'm also in from the very bottom tick to the top tick. And it's just that I typically make more money when we go from the bottom tick to the uptick, because there's, like right now, you can buy quality companies. Let's say you have a half crappy company down 60% and you have a very good company down 60%. I mean, that's an opportunity arbitrage. So there's no problem really to just reshuffle stuff, even if you're down, because some companies should perhaps go up 200%, but you can find one that's going to go up 400%. So at face value, yes, you're taking, let's say, 60% loss buying something that's also down 60%. But the future expected returns are wildly different.
All right, Chad, let's get you in here, because you are broadly one of the most active traders that I know, especially one that I talk to on a very regular basis. And I like your strategy. You're in a lot of stocks, but you have core positions and then you have trading positions, and you've been around this market for a long time. So on Eric's point, what are you doing? How do you think the best way to play this unfortunate still downtrend for the stocks are?
Well, I mean, when I build my portfolio, I'm always looking at not just how I can make the most money, but also how I can preserve capital, especially when we're in a bearish scenario. I mean, so when I'm looking at diversification, I personally like being in some of the oversold producers, maybe not the majors, but some of the smaller producers to mid-tiers that still have big exploration upside. They still have big drill programs. But the key with producers is if there's a move in the metals, they're going to monetize it immediately. It's not a question of do they have gold or silver or copper in the ground. They actually can immediately monetize those prices. And as we know, the producers usually turn up first. I have probably my largest position in those, Corey. And then I also have a margin of safety with royalty companies, because royalty companies are a little bit different business model. They're not hit as hard by inflation. They're still going to get their ounces in the ground from the producers in any kind of a scenario. And they have very small staffs. They don't have the labor problems and the cost inputs from fuel and things that other mining stocks have. So I think it's important to have some margin of safety in your portfolio that, sure, it may not bounce up to be a 10 bagger, but it's also not going to fall out of bed. And the royalty companies have held up far better than the mining stocks overall. And then I have, you know, as you go down the food chain, I've got positions in developers, but I personally will avoid developers that are just sitting there not doing anything, hoping to get bought out, because there's no value drivers for those companies. So I want to be in the development stories where they've got some nice ounces in the ground as a margin of safety, to Eric's point, but that are also still exploring, maybe not the biggest drill programs, but there's some value drivers. They're looking at new areas. Maybe they've got a gap zone. Maybe they've got a second project that's moving forward while they work on their main project, something of value in the ground that would also move if there's a bounce in the metals. And then as far as the exploration stories, again, I want them to have already made a discovery. I want the best teams. I want the best projects. I am very leery of people that are promoting a new company that has no idea if they're going to find anything yet. Sure, you could take the risk on it, but why would you want to take the risk in this kind of a market when everything is sold off? Why not buy quality while it's cheap? So I'm avoiding most of the early stage drill plays. Personally, I have a few. And then as far as optionality plays, big companies that need higher prices, there's no reason to touch them at this point. So I'm avoiding optionality plays. That's how I'm looking at it.
All right, guys, good discussion, good back and forth. Couple different strategies here. And you know what, everybody, you need to figure out what your own strategy is. But remember, don't get just focused on simply the precious metals sector. You need to understand what's happening in the broad markets, because that is also playing a very big role in pushing down a lot of these smaller precious metals stocks. Even when you see something like gold move up today, the small stocks can still sell off when we see the broad averages sell off as well. Eric, thank you as always for your time. We'll chat again next week or in a couple weeks. Hope you have a great rest of your week.
Thank you guys, the same.